This is Audible.
Recorded Books and RB Digital present The Armored Saint by Mike Cole. Narrated by Michi Barral.
From Thucydides. The strong have done what they could. Now the weak will suffer what they must. Chapter 1. They'll hear you. From Writ Allah, Chapter 1, Verse 14. And it shall be as a plague unto your people, from father to son, from mother to daughter, until your seed is dust. My redemption is the emperor. My hope is his outstretched hand. He has made my way plain and asked only this of me. Suffer no wizard to live. Helwaz took her father's hand, squeezing it hard. Samson's eyebrows lifted as he squeezed hers back. Been a long time since you took your old father's hand. What happened to you being nearly a woman grown? The warm roughness of his palm made her feel safe, but she only smiled up at him, shrugged. The road to Hammersdown's the safest in the valley, her father said. No bandit would risk running into the Order. It's the Order that scares me. Me too, Samson agreed. But they're a sight better than a wolf pack or a robber band, eh? She didn't want to hear that something frightened him now. She wanted Samson the father and protector, not Samson the friend. Her father was a big man, and if his hair had gone gray and his stomach drooped over his belt, he more than made up for it with his broad shoulders and thick hands. For all his talk of being frightened, Samson's eyes were hard. Sergeant's eyes, the village mayor called them. He had fought alongside her father in the old war. Don't let his factor's hands fool you, Helwaz. Your father was a shield hewer, the strongest pikeman I've ever known. The very name Samson struck terror into the hearts of the Emperor's enemies. Well, Samson pulled her into an embrace, holding her tightly to his side as they walked, his arm strong and comforting. This old man will take what he can get. I love you, Papa. I love you too, Dove. Hoofbeats. Samson stopped, glanced over his shoulder. Helwaz turned. Dust was rising on the road, billowing out behind a column of riders. Too many to be bandits, even if they were brave enough to risk the Order's main road. Helwaz heard jangling chains and looked for a cart, but couldn't see one. Papa, what's... The dust whirled and cleared to reveal pilgrims, their gray cloaks flapping away from leather armor, flails held out before them. At their head rode a sojourner. His cloak was edged with gold, the bright red fabric so clean it shone, as if the dust dared not touch him. The sojourner held his flail across his chest, head over one shoulder, black iron spikes nestled against the scarlet fabric of his cloak. The red meant he had completed the great sojourn, a year on the road to visit the sites where the Emperor had fought the devils until they were pushed back into hell. The pilgrim's gray marked them as lesser men who'd done only the fortnight-long pilgrimage. They were pale imitations of their leader, their cloaks simple. Only their flails were equal, the same stout, well-oiled wood, the same sturdy black length of chain. The Order had arrived, as if talk of them had made them appear. She heard her father gasp in recognition, and then he was yanking her out of the road and into the chill mud. Helwaz fell to her knees, winced from the cold wet seeping into her dress. "Eyes down," Samson said. "Mouth closed." The terror was as intense as it was sudden. She obeyed him, closing her mouth and casting her eyes to the ground. The cool air felt suddenly hot, the wide sky pressing down on them. The hoofbeats came closer, and with them, the sound of the jangling chains.
"Bow your head, girl, now!" Samson hissed.
The hoofbeats seemed to continue endlessly. The sound of the chains rose as they drew closer. Helwaz could see the lynx playing out behind the horses, dragging in the dirt. A dead woman slid past Helwaz, green and bloated, caked with road filth. She was wrapped in the long gray ropes of her innards, tangled in the metal links until Helwaz couldn't tell her guts from the chains. The horses dragged another body beside her, wrapped in metal like a silkworm in molt. Helwaz's gorge rose at the stink, and she gagged, clapping a hand to her mouth. Another moment, and they would be past.
"Please, don't notice us. Please ride on."
The jangling ceased as the riders halted. Helwaz couldn't resist glancing up. The sojourner had a narrow face and a smile that was somehow worse than a scowl. He slowly turned his horse, a black animal taller and broader than any Helwaz had ever seen. Helwaz felt fear climb her spine, followed by anger at him for making her afraid.
"You there," the sojourner called to Samson. "Attend me."
Samson rose, eyes still on the ground.
"Your Eminence." "You live here?"
"Yes, Your Eminence.
We hail from Lutet, just up the—"
"I know where Lutet is," the sojourner said. "What I need to know is where Frog Fork is."
"If you ride on past the giant shoulder," Samson said, "you will see a carter's track through the woods. Take it until the ground goes to marsh, then head into the mire. You'll see it."
"Can we make it by nightfall?"
"Yes, my lord, if you ride without stopping."
"Very well. In that case, have you anything in that satchel to slake my thirst?"
"Maybe some bread."
"I will pray a cycle for your soul, and the Emperor will bless you for supporting his own hand in the valley."
"I'm sorry, Your Eminence. I am a factor on my way to take letters."
"That is not an answer to my question."
"All I have is my ledger, pen, and ink."
"He's a villager, Holy Father," one of the pilgrims said. "They are bred to lie."
He turned to Samson, held out a hand.
"Give it here."
Without lifting his eyes, Samson handed the satchel over. The pilgrim fumbled with the iron buckle before cursing and ripping it open, sending a popped rivet flying. He thrust one gauntleted hand inside and seized a handful of her father's pens, tossed them into the mud. One of the inkpots followed. Helwaz's mind whirled, calculating the cost of the precious items, figuring how they could be repaired. It wasn't so bad. The pens were wood and metal. Some had fine tips, but provided she was careful when she cleaned them, they wouldn't be damaged. She winced as the inkpot struck the wet mud, but she didn't think it had cracked. So long as he didn't throw out any of the— The pilgrim's hand disappeared back into the satchel, emerged with a handful of crumpled paper. Helwaz was only able to half-stifle a cry as he tossed the precious sheets in the air. They drifted in the wind, made their way down toward the wet mud. Before Helwaz knew what she was doing, she had taken a long, lunging step, her hand lashing out to grasp at the falling paper. The sudden move stirred the wind, and the precious sheets danced away from her, floating sideways and down, always down, until the ground snatched them up. Helwaz chased them, knowing it was useless, unable to stop herself, eyes locked on the slowly spreading stain that was wet mud hungrily devouring the tools of her trade.
A hoof stomped in the mud, so close that she had to leap back, her eyes darting up to catch the pilgrims. They were a dazzling gray-blue, like the skim of ice over flowing water.
"What in the Emperor's name do you think you are doing?"
Helwa straightened, panic blossoming in her gut.
"Just picking up the... I only meant to pick up the paper before it got wet."
"Helwas,"
Samson said.
"Your Eminence," she added.
"If the paper is on the ground," the pilgrim said, "it's because I meant it to be there."
Even now, Helwas had to fight not to bend down and pick the paper up.
"He only threw out some of it," she told herself. "It's not all ruined."
The thought helped her to be still. The sojourner leaned on his saddle horn, gestured to the bodies in the chains behind them.
"See that, girl?"
Helwas glanced back at the bodies. She knew she should answer, but she was robbed of speech, first by fear, then by rage. The sojourner's smile slowly faded as he waited. Samson's elbow in her ribs.
"Answer him!"
"Yes."
Her father's elbow in her ribs once more, almost knocking her over.
"Your Eminence!"
Helwas added again. The sojourner nodded, whether for the elbowing or at her answer she couldn't tell. Such is the fate of wizards and those who give shelter to wizards. They betrayed the Emperor. The sojourner gestured to the corpses with one red-gloved hand.
"This is why the writ counsels obedience above all, girl. For a chance at power, they would have rent the veil and let the devils walk among us. Is this not more than they deserve?"
Helwas looked sideways at her father, but his eyes were on the ground, his jaw clenched. Helwas looked back to the corpse. The dead woman's tongue had swollen out of her mouth, fat and gray. The moments dragged on. The sojourner had asked her a question. She had to answer. She pictured herself wrapped in those chains, dragged behind a horse. Her lips moved by themselves.
"No, Your Eminence."
The sojourner straightened, satisfied. His small smile returned.
"Very well. Brother Tone, I take it there is nothing of use in that rag."
The pilgrim looked up from Samson's satchel.
"No, Holy Father. The villager speaks truth for once." "Let's get moving, then. He is likely speaking truth about the ride to Frogfork as well."
"Yes, Holy Father."
Brother Tone turned his horse, throwing the satchel over his shoulder as he went. Helwas watched it turn end over end, the lid flapping open, the remaining papers threatening to fall out. She could see the wind plucking at them, ready to cast them down to join their comrades in the ruinous mud. She felt herself start to cry then, because it was the rest of what they had, because she knew that most of their earnings for the next season would have to go to replenish their supply, because... She heard a dull thud, felt something soft strike her hands. Her father's eyes widened, and the remains of the sojourner's smile vanished. Helwas looked down at the satchel nestled in her outstretched arms. She had moved. She had caught it.
"I'm sorry."
Her lips felt numb. She didn't know why she'd done it. It was as if her body had been unable to accept the outcome, not when it could do something about it.
"I didn't mean..."
"Perhaps you do not understand what the Holy Writ means by obedience?"
The sojourner's voice was cold. His spurs jingled as he touched them to his horse, and the animal took a step toward her.
Please, Your Eminence. Samson moved between them. She's only a girl.
Brother Tone switched the reins and pulled his horse between Samson and the sojourner.
She's near a woman grown, the pilgrim said,
his blue eyes blazing. Old enough to know what she is doing.
Please, Your Eminence, Samson said, looking up now. She is my only child.
Tone sat up straight, hands tightening on his flail.
Come here. Show me your eye. Holy brother, there is no...
Samson began.
Your eye.
The pilgrim cut him off.
Open it.
Helwes reached for her father, but he placed a broad hand on her belly, shoving her back. With the other, he reached up to his right eye, prying it wide open with thumb and forefinger. Tone looked for a long time. At last he sat back, turned to his master, nodded.
I see no portal, the sojourner agreed.
There is no wizardry here, only pride and the foolish love of a father for his child.
Your first love should be the Emperor, above all things. Yes, holy brother.
The relief in Samson's voice made Helwas angry and sad at the same time.
You're lucky. We've pressing business, the pilgrim said, tugging his horse back into the column. Otherwise I'd teach you a lesson. Yes, holy brother, Samson said again, but it was lost in the pounding of hoofbeats, the jangling of chains, and the rising dust as the riders started moving again.
Helwas and Samson stood, silent and frozen, as the whole column trundled into the distance, until at last they turned with the road and moved out of sight. Samson didn't take his hand from Helwas until the hoofbeats had faded. Helwas glared after them.
Bastards, Samson said, patted the dust from his trousers.
Then he turned to Helwas, his face lit with fury.
Idiot girl! What in the Emperor's name were you thinking?
Helwas had thought she couldn't be more frightened, but her father's hot anger was somehow worse than the sojourner's cool threats.
I'm sorry, Papa.
She held out the satchel, showing the dry sheet safe inside.
I saved some.
Samson's eyes flicked from her to the satchel and back again. He took a long, shuddering breath, and the anger in his eyes vanished as he exhaled.
So you did, girl. So you did.
He looked at her face and sighed, put his hands on her shoulders.
Helwas, I know you were trying to help, but that was very, very foolish. That could have turned out badly for both of us.
I'm sorry, Papa, she said again. I don't know why I did it. The paper is so costly, and I thought that he was finished with it.
The fear and the humiliation swirled in her mind and her gut, so intense that she almost missed a third, stronger emotion, boiling beneath it all.
Rage. Fury at the order for making her father grovel while they destroyed the tools of his trade. No buts, he cut her off. That was reckless. When a killer dumps your kid in the mud, you smile sweetly and tell him he's done right.
The anger wouldn't let her.
But he hasn't done right, Papa, and the writ says...
That a word of truth is more pleasing to the Emperor than poetry. Yes, I know the writ as well as you. But it doesn't change that however pleasing it may be to the Emperor's ears, it isn't to the sojourner's, and he's the one with the flail.
Helwas's stomach churned. She had seen dead animals before, and been graveside for funerals more than once, but the image of the dead woman's face still hung in her mind. Her father was right. She had put him in danger.
I'm sorry, Papa.
Samson embraced her.
From now on, when the order's about, you're a statue. Mind me? Still as a stone. Answer their questions, and that's all. Now help me clean up this mess.
They cleaned the mud off the pens as best they could. The inkpot was whole, if a bit dirty. The paper was so thoroughly soaked that it was hard to distinguish from the mud, and they left it where it lay, walking on in silence. Her father was right. She had risked both of their lives. As Helwas considered it, the anger turned from the order to herself.
Samson looked at her, smiled grimly.
"What's done is done, Helwas. Don't drive yourself mad about it."
"Yes, Papa,"
Helwas said, but she could hear the shame in her voice. Samson put a gentle hand on her shoulder.
"What does the writ tell us about the light of the sacred throne?"
"That we bask in its radiance always," Helwas answered from memory. "That the Emperor's light warms and blinds in equal measure."
"That's so,"
Samson nodded. He jerked his thumb up at the sun. "And there it is, shining over us all. No matter what happened, try and take joy in the day, girl. We have precious few of them."
Helwas did her best, trying to feel the warmth of the sun on her face the rest of the way to Hammersdown, but the sour feeling stayed in her stomach, and her father's kindness made her feel even worse. She almost wished he'd shout at her, tell her she was a fool who could have gotten them both killed. She opened her mouth to apologize again when she heard shouts, growing louder.
"It sounds like Turek," Helwas said.
Her father nodded. "Something's got him stirred."
Turek's voice grew louder as they walked past Hammersdown's sentry tower. Helwas heard other voices now. Jaren Trapper, and Bertel Fletcher, too. Alna Shepherd stood at the common's far end. His dog, Callie, had rounded the sheep into a tight circle. She stood in front of them, a low growl in her throat, until Alma's daughter, Astra, patted the dog into silence. Jaren stood beside Bertel. The two were practically identical, lined faces nearly hidden by thick gray beards. Jaren was distinguished only by his gold chain of office, marking him as mayor. Both men were bent over Turek, red-faced and shouting. Turek was simple, dressed in rags. He'd lived on Hammersdown's charity his entire life, rocking back and forth on the village green. Helwas' mother said that Turek's mother had lustful thoughts, so the Emperor had taken Turek's mind when he was still in the womb. As long as Helwas had known Turek, he'd been as gentle as the sheep Callie protected. But now his face was purple, his words running together until they formed a single long shout.
"Shut your damn hole," Jaren shouted back. "Sacred throne, what's gotten into you?"
Bertel looked up, saw Samson, and traded a long look with Jaren before putting on a forced smile.
"Samson Factor! As I live and breathe, good to see you."
Samson let go of Helwa's hand. She fought the urge to reach for his again.
"We had some trouble on the road," Samson said.
"All's well here?"
Bertel smiled so broadly it looked like his cheeks hurt. He glanced nervously at Turek.
"Of course all's well. Why don't we head to my shop and get to business, eh? Marta's made some meat pies."
Samson's eyes stayed on Turek. There was spit on the simpleton's lips now, white and foaming. Astra jogged over to them. She was 2 winters older than Helwas, long black curls framing her face. She had taken a woman's shape more quickly than Helwas, taller and fuller. Her eyes were dark and beautiful, but they were too wide, her face pale.
"Hello, Master Factor. Would Helwas like to come play with Callie until you're done? Papa's about to take the flock in, and I've the afternoon to gather hawksholly. I've got my betrothal dress, too," she said to Helwas. "Would you like to see it?"
Samson glanced distractedly at Astra. "Thank you, Astra, but Helwas is here today as my apprentice. She's to be working as well."
"Oh," Astra said. "Well, maybe she can come later?"
Helwas was happy to see her and felt a stab of disappointment at missing the chance to run Callie through the tall grasses on the common, but the pall of fear that hung over the village made it short-lived.
"Look!" Churik jumped to his feet, prying his eye wide. "See the portal? I'm a gateway. Hell comes through me. The devils will soon be here."
Samson froze.
"What did he say?"
"Churik!" Jaren shouted, grabbing Churik's shoulders. "Shut your damn yob and shut it now!"
But Churik wouldn't stop.
"Wizard! Look, I'm a wizard! I bring hell to you all!"
"What in the shadow of the throne is this?" Samson's eyes went hard.
"It's nothing," Bertel said. "Mad ravings is all. You know old Churik?"
The Fletcher laughed. Helwas thought it sounded more like a scream.
"Hell!" Churik chanted. "Wizard! Devil! The portal in my eye! The portal in my eye!"
"Damn you!" Jaren yelled, hurling Churik to the ground and kneeling on his chest, hands locked around his throat.
"You will shut up, or by the Emperor I will strangle you and leave you for the wolves!"
"Don't hurt him!"
Helwas started forward, but Samson grabbed her collar, pulling her back. Churik kicked, gurgling.
"Your girl's got a kind heart. Nothing wrong with that," Bertel said. "Anyway, that's all sorted. Let's to business."
"I'll not do business today," Samson grunted.
"Papa,"
Helwas began, thinking of the paper they'd lost to the mud.
"Samson,"
Jaren called to him, loosening his grip so Churik could take a whooping breath.
"It's nothing."
Samson stabbed an angry finger in the mayor's direction.
"That is not nothing. That is burning talk. I'll not have dealings anywhere near it."
"It's sorted," Jaren shouted. "We both need the custom. Don't leave without trade."
"He said wizardry," Samson said. "He said he had the portal in his eye."
"He's a madman." Jaren let Churik draw another breath, tightened his grip again before he could speak.
"Come on."
Astra tugged on Helwa's hand. "Let's leave the men to handle this, and..."
"It was the order that troubled us on the road," Samson shouted, pushing Helwas behind him. "They're about. Might even be close enough to hear. Ask them if they care for the mad."
"You don't have to choke him,"
Helwas said, struggling, her father's big hand holding her fast.
"Damn you, Samson," the mayor shouted. "We both know he's no wizard. He's mad."
"And we both know that doesn't matter," Samson replied. "The Order won't care. They'll knit you. And you're not even a day's walk from my home and hearth, you bastard. I'll not have my family knit because you can't keep a muzzle on your dog."
Jaren's face turned white, red spots showing on his cheeks.
"Samson!
No more talk. You'd best choke him until he stops kicking."
Helwa's father seethed.
"Or cut out his tongue and run him out. For our sake, if not your own."
"He's simple," Jaren said. "He'll die out there."
"Then that is as the Emperor wills," Samson snarled. "Better him than mine."
Samson turned and dragged Helwas so hard that she had to take great leaping steps to keep up with him. Callie set to barking a steady, accusing stream that followed them out to the trail home. Helwas was quiet for a long time, anger at the injustice warring with her fear of the look on her father's face. They walked without speaking for as long as Helwaz could stand.
Papa, the mayor said he wasn't a wizard. There was no portal in his eye. The Order would have seen that, even if they came.
Samson only shook his head, the fury in his eyes fading to sadness. The look made her bold.
That's the truth, isn't it? Churik isn't a wizard. He's just simple.
Yes, Samson nodded. Jaren spoke truth.
Then why?
Helwaz began. Better to knit than permit, Samson recited from the writ. What happens if Churik really is a wizard and the Order lets it pass?
The portal in his eye opens and the devils come through,
Helwaz recited from memory.
But he's not a wizard.
Aye, her father nodded, but it doesn't matter. Churik's life, the lives of all of Hammersdown are nothing against what would be lost should a devil come through the veil. If there's even the smallest chance that Churik might be telling the truth, the Order cannot risk it. Remember this, if you ever hear words of wizardry, loose talk of the veil or what lies beyond, you run straight to me, you hear? Better that we handle it in the village than let it pass to the Order. Remember what you saw on the road today. That is what comes of letting matters like this go unattended. She remembered the words of the writ. This we believe. That the Emperor stood for all mankind during the great battle for the future of the world. That he cast the devils back into hell. That, gravely wounded, he used the last of his life to draw the veil shut between the world and hell, sealing the devils away forever. He died and was reborn as the divine imperial soul, immortal, his unblinking eye ever turned on the safety of his empire, on keeping the veil shut. For 1,000 years, humanity had known not peace, but life, at least, which was more than they could expect should the devils return. But sometimes they did return. There were men and women who thought themselves above the imperial writ, who wanted the wizardry that flowed like water in hell, who were willing to reach beyond the veil to get it. Such people knew great power for a time, but sooner or later the portal in their eye would open, and they would turn from people into doorways, and the devils would come through. Suffer no wizard to live. When a wizard was discovered, the Order came to put the matter right. They took no chances. Even talk of wizarding meant there was a chance the veil had been rent, and what was rent must be knit.
Will they kill him, Papa?
Helwaz asked.
Will they cut out his tongue?
Samson looked sad. They will if they are wise. But men are soft when it comes to their own. Churik may be simple, but he's someone's son. And Jaren would not have kept him through so many winters if there wasn't at least one in Hammersdown with sympathy for the man.
Are the devils so bad? Have you ever seen one?
Helwaz asked. No one has, puppet. No one but the Order.
Then how do we know they're real? Helwaz asked.
Samson looked annoyed. Because the writ tells us, girl. Because the Order reminds us. The devils are real and they are terrible. And we must be ever vigilant for their return.
That didn't make sense, but what Helwaz wanted was to feel safe. To feel like she and her father were on the same side. And so all she said was, "Yes, Papa." There was a part of Helwa's stomach that churned and whirled. A sick ball.
deep in her middle. That part could not forget the dead woman's face, her swollen tongue gray and cracked lips. That part told Helwaz that even though her father's words made a cruel kind of sense, this wasn't the way things were supposed to be. Chapter 2. Tinker's Forge and Ranger's Gift. From the Journal of Samson Factor. Our Captain General is Elise Alderman. Goes by Shropshire, I think. These city lords aren't named for their trade. His badge is a winged palatine, a sainted devil slayer. This is meant to comfort the levy, I think, but it's off. Palatines are devil slayers, aye. But not one of them survived the contest. The journey home took the rest of the day. Hammers down had chilled them both, and Samson spoke no more of taking joy in the day or of anything else, not even humming to fill the silence as he always did. Helwaz clung to his hand, needing the safety that his calloused palm conveyed, even if it did make her feel like a child. When at last the Lutet sentry tower reared above the treetops, Samson cupped his hands and shouted,
"Where the tower? Wake up, Danad, you old idiot!"
But it was the face of Danad's son, Ingomer, that appeared over the wooden edge.
"Sorry, Master Factor. I must have dozed off."
"Your secret's safe with me, young Master Clothier. Where's the mayor?" "With the tinkers, I think," Ingomer said. "What news from the road?" "The Order is riding for Frog Fork." And Churik's finally flipped his cap. "Could mean trouble." "Let me know what the mayor says." Samson grunted assent and led Helwaz beneath the tower's broad beams. Their house was in the shadow of the tower, but Samson turned away from it and up the rutted track that led from the common green to the tinker's workshop.
"When did Ingomer get old enough to stand sentry?"
Helwaz laughed.
"Last winter, Papa. You wrote the scroll, remember?"
"How did I get so damned old?" Samson grumbled.
The sun was just beginning its slow journey behind the treetops as the tinker's house came into view. A long, low passageway linked the house and the even larger workshop, its slate roof exceeded only by the steeple of the Emperor's shrine just off the village common. A large opening at the peak vented black smoke, and Helwaz felt the heat long before she reached the huge double doors. Samson tried the great bronze ring, pulling until he grunted. He looked up at Helwaz, embarrassed.
"Locked?"
"Not locked," Helwaz said, taking hold of the ring. "You just have to lift first, and then they swing right open."
The thick wood creaked as the door swung wide.
"I suppose I shouldn't be surprised. You and Basina Tinker are attached at the hip."
The heat of the workshop hit Helwaz like a wall, a thick dampness that had her sweating before she drew breath. Barnard Tinker stood talking to Salt Grower, while Sigir, the mayor of Hammersdown, impatiently waited for the tinker's attention. Barnard was nearly twice the size of Salt, his tan skin stretched over a mountain range of muscle, marked by the burn scars common to all tinkers. His two sons, Guntar and Gunnar, were smaller versions of their father, with bronzed skin and powerful shoulders. They followed their father's example of shaving their heads, which glistened with sweat. They offered Helwaz only a short glance before turning back to their work. Basina Tinker was the mirror of her brothers, save that she kept her hair, a nod to her inevitable duties as wife and mother. She was like Ostra, older and taller than Helwaz, and more womanly, save the strong muscles of her arms and the bronze luster of her skin. She smiled as Helwaz appeared, and Helwaz thought she had never seen anyone so beautiful in all her life. Sigir was thick and tall like Samson, with darker hair and softer hands, a thick mustache that hung to his chest. His chain of office was polished to a high shine. The fruits of the family labor were scattered all around, plow blades and cistern pipes, wheel rims and pry bars. Metal reflected the light cast by the molten glow of the crucible that dominated the workshop's far end, the huge cauldron bubbling with molten iron. The light from the crucible played around a plain bronze door, set into the thick pitch-soaked logs of the workshop's wall. Behind it lay the tinker's vault, where they stored their imperial commissions, secret and safe.
"Sigir, I'm glad you're here," Samson began.
"Whatever it is, we'll keep for a moment," Sigir said. "I've been waiting here since..."
"Stumps need hauling. Master Mayor won't be another moment."
Sald brushed his hair from his eyes and gave a short bow to Helwaz.
"Miss Factor?"
Helwaz curtsied.
"Sacred Throne," Barnard said. "The whole village is in my workshop today.
Everyone mind themselves while I get Sald settled." Barnard led Sald to the workshop's side door. A pair of oxen stood outside, one of Barnard's tinker-made yokes over their shoulders. Long metal rods extended from the yoke, running down the creature's legs to leather straps at their ankles. Barnard turned to the great pile of seed stone stacked beside the door, bundled in salted cheesecloth to keep it dry. He took up a knife from one of the work tables and cut off a small piece of some of the cheesecloth, wrapping it carefully and passing it to Sald.
"Keep that dry. Even a drop of water will have it boiling."
Sald held the sea stone as if it were a poisonous snake. Barnard grinned as he handed him a mug of water.
"You don't have to be frightened of it, Master Grower. Keeping it dry will suffice."
Sald nodded and moved to the tiny metal canister on the top of the yoke.
"Sea stone's already in there," Barnard said. "Put the stuff I just gave you in your pocket in case you run out before the job's done. Just add the water."
Sald looked doubtfully at Barnard as he opened the canister. He held the mug over it, hesitated.
Barnard rolled his eyes.
"It's not wizardry, Sald. Just dump it in."
Sald emptied the mug into the canister. Helwaz heard the seethed stone sizzling at the water's touch, could smell the high acrid tang of the smoke that came wafting out. Sald jumped back, and Barnard reached across, slapping the canister lid shut.
"Once you wet it, you don't want to let any out. Don't forget that if you have to charge it again, and don't touch it when it's wet. It'll burn you worse than boiling water."
Sald raced to gather up the oxen steering lines where they lay coiled at the team's side, as the pipes running from the canister began to rattle.
"Not much to remember," Barnard said. "If the engine dies, just put in the rest of the stone and wet it again. A single mug will do."
Sald nodded.
"You sure you won't take coin?"
"Not from you," Barnard said, gesturing to a big, ancient-looking tree stump squatting near the workshop wall. Long chains were already lashed to it, trailing back to the oxen's harness.
"Have the yoke back by nightfall. You should be able to pull all the stumps you like with that engine on your team."
"I'll take care of your stump," Sald said, "and I'll bring you a sack of cabbages when I bring the yoke back. It's mighty generous of you, Master Tinker."
"All our riches come from the Emperor," Barnard waved. "We must not be miserly with them."
Sald nodded, flicked the leads, and clucked the oxen into motion. The stump was enormous, and the taproot must have been deep within the earth. But the rods on the tinker yoke pushed in perfect time with the animal's footsteps, and it came dragging out of the ground with a sound like a great ripping of cloth. The oxen lurched forward, unused to the power in the tinker yoke. They stumbled, found their feet, and the stump bounced along the track back toward Salt Grower's patch.
"Pulling a stump and a sack of cabbages?" Samson asked. "That's all the rent you'll charge for a day's use of a tinker engine?"
Barnard shrugged. "Cheaper than having to keep my own team of oxen. Besides, Saul's a neighbor and a friend."
"You can throw a stone from one end of Lutet to the other. Everyone's a neighbor and a friend."
Barnard shrugged again.
"The Emperor is my judge."
"Not sure he's going to think you a better man for giving away your shirt. Though, if I had that sweet honey from the Emperor's own purse, I suppose I could afford to be more generous, too."
He jerked his chin at the sealed vault door. "Is that why the order is about? Are they picking up one of their commissions?"
Barnard shook his head.
"If they were, I'd have told you already. You think I'd leave a friend in doubt?"
"The order's about?" Sigir asked.
"Aye," Samson replied. "That's why I've come. We met them on the road to Hammerstone."
"Do you still want to talk business?" Barnard asked Sigir. But the mayor ignored him, eyes locked on Samson. Helwas knew she should listen to her father and the mayor talk. The order being nearby was important, and the mayor might have questions for her. But Basina made it seem all less important somehow. Helwas smiled shyly at her, and Basina grinned back, the crucible's light playing on the muscles of her arms.
"What are you working on?" Helwas asked.
"My groom gift." Basina snatched up a rough metal armlet, still glowing cherry red from the forge fires. The ends were caked with ash, but Helwas could see the skilled twists in the metal, the grinning faces that marked the ends. "Randall said he doesn't want anything too splendid." Helwas didn't like being reminded of Basina's betrothal. Basina married would mean she would be gone to her husband's house, and an end to their nights whispering secrets by the fire, or days gathering wood together.
"You met the order?" Sigir asked.
"They rode past us on their way to Frog Fork," Samson said.
"Then why do you look so worried?"
"Mayor Annalee's got a good head on her shoulders. She'll give them whatever plunder they're bent on this time, and then they'll be on their way."
"Churik's lost his head."
"He was born with a lost head," Barnard shrugged.
"He was raving about being a wizard. Said he had the portal in his eye. Shouted it so loud, I'm surprised the order didn't hear it in Frog Fork."
Sigir and Barnard's expressions froze.
"Are you certain?"
Samson nodded. "Helwas was with me. I told them to turn Churik out." Sigir looked to Barnard.
"Foolish words are the only things that travel faster than horses. They will know, and soon."
"Don't borrow trouble, Mayor," Barnard said. "When the Order knows, we'll know. Jaren's no fool. He'll find a way to keep Churik quiet."
"In the meantime," Sigir said, "I'll double the watch."
"If the order comes here," Samson said, "the watch will do us precious little."
"Is it true?"
Basina asked Helwas.
"It is," Helwas said. "They had a sojourner leading them. He called Papa a liar and I talked back to him."
Basina caught her breath.
"Oh, Helwas, that was very stupid."
Helwas grinned, proud of the awe she saw in Basina's eyes.
"I know. It was, but you should have seen him. He didn't know what to do."
Basina laughed, and Samson turned to them.
"That's enough."
"Basina's right, Helwas. It was very stupid."
"You were lucky,"
Sigir said, frowning. We were, Samson agreed. They had two dead in tow.
Did you recognize them?
Samson shook his head. The road had had its way with them. Wasn't enough left to recognize.
Come on, Helwaz, Basina said, setting down her hammer. Let's go down to the well, and you can tell me about it.
Oh, no you don't, Barnard scolded. You owe me work until supper, as we agreed.
Fine, father.
Basina rolled her eyes, and Helwaz felt a stab of disappointment.
Please, Master Tinker, Helwaz asked him. I haven't seen her all day.
You see plenty of one another, Barnard said. Basina's a groom gift to finish, and I want the rough work done by tonight. Besides, I don't think your father is feeling terribly indulgent after you tweaked a sojourner's nose.
She's brave. I'll give her that, Samson said.
Brave and young, the mayor said.
Brave and stupid, Gunter groused from his workbench, then ducked his head as his father threw a brass mug at him.
Shut your hole, Barnard growled.
Best you head home, Sigir said to Samson. Luba will be wondering where you've gone to. I'll send word on the sentries. I suppose all we can do now is watch and wait. Helwaz gave Basina a hug, kissed her cheek.
I'll miss you. I'll miss you too. Maybe I can convince Father to let us see one another after supper? I'll work as fast as I can. I'll wait by the well, Helwaz whispered in her ear. See if you can get away to draw water or something.
Basina smiled at her as they turned to go. Helwaz paused by the common well on the way home, careful to seem pensive and worried.
Come on, Dove, Samson said. Your father's no great harbor from a wicked world, but there's more comfort to be found hearthside. Your mother's soup and the sight of home will do you good.
What if the order is coming here?
Then the sentries will give us warning long before they arrive, and we will be ready.
Ready for what? To run? To fight?
That will be for the mayor to decide.
Can I sit for a moment? By myself? Just trying to take joy in the day, Papa, as you told me to.
Samson blinked up at the sky, looked back down to her, eyes sad.
I'm sorry you had to see such things, Helwaz. I would spare you the world if I could. That'll be your husband's task someday, and he'll likely fail at it just as miserably as I have. But your mother's done all right. Women are tougher than they look.
She hugged him around his big belly.
We are. I'll come in at the gloaming, I promise. I want to be outside now.
Samson kissed the top of her head and smiled.
At the gloaming now. Don't want the Kipti stealing you away.
Helwaz rolled her eyes.
That's just a story, Papa. The Kipti don't really steal children.
Still, don't make me worry.
He turned and walked off toward home, glancing at her over his shoulder as he went. Helwaz sat and watched the wind toss the trees at the common's edge, but her mind was again full with the image of the dead woman's face, her body coiled in chains and her own guts sliding down the road. She tried to think of something else. A husband, being betrothed like Ostra or Basina. Helwaz would go to live in her husband's house, to honor his father and mother, to tend to his trade. But when she closed her eyes and tried to imagine life as a wife, she saw nothing, only an empty space dragging out before her.
It's because of the shock you've had, Helwaz thought. Try
and think of the life you'd want. The only image that came to mind was a day in the past spring, when Barnard had made Bessina and her a little kite with a tinker engine to help it fly, puffing seedstone smoke as the wind filled the cloth and pulled it to the end of its string, and Heloise had only to run and look at Bessina's eyes and her smiling mouth. It had been warm, and chores were done, and Heloise had thought she could run like that forever. The thought made the sour feeling in her stomach ebb, so she returned to it again and again, and before she knew it, the wind had picked up, and the sentries changed again, and the light began to fail. The gloaming had snuck up on her, and her father would be furious if she wasn't home soon. At least the order had not come, but Bessina hadn't either, and Heloise swallowed her disappointment. Heloise ran for her house, so intent on beating the failing light that she blundered into a pair of legs as solid and hard as oak trunks. She stumbled back, went down hard. The legs were clad in coarse gray wool, shot through with leaves and twigs. A rotten-looking leather pouch hung at the waist, along with a hatchet, head up so that the keen edge could be clearly seen, the only part perfectly clean, glowing with a fresh coat of oil. The voice that boomed from atop the legs gave the lie to the hard appearance. It was soft and kind. "Where are we off to in such a hurry?" The man bent at the waist, bringing the rest of him into view. The coarse wool leggings matched his shirt, and a leather pack slung over one shoulder matched his pouch. But there, the hardness ended. His face was warm and open. His wide black eyes danced, the corners crinkling. He reached out a long and gangly arm, offering fingers as knotted and cured as dried leather. "Claudio!" Heloise scrambled up, letting the old man draw her to her feet and into a tight embrace, her head resting on his chest, smelling of old leather and leaf mold.
"Well now," Claudio said, his hard hand gentle on the back of her hair. "Aren't you a little wood-tick today? It can't be an old man's soft clothes that has you so tucked in."
He gently pried her loose and pushed her back.
"What's eating you, girl?"
Heloise thought of telling him about the order. Clodio's dark eyes seemed to talk to her, speaking more clearly than words.
"Life is a joy," they said. "The world is wide and wonderful, and I am glad you are in it."
She couldn't bear to see that humor fade, to have it replaced with concern or worse, sympathy. She was so glad to think of something other than the dead woman and the chains and the order. She shook her head.
"What did you bring?"
Worry bent the corners of Clodio's laughing eyes. He knew she was avoiding the question, but he wouldn't pry. She loved him for it.
"What makes you think I brought anything?"
he asked, hands falling protectively to the leather pouch at his waist. "You always bring something," she said, reaching for it. She meant something other than what he had to sell. Clodio was a wanderer and a finder of things. This sort of bush pig quill that the jeweler needed for a necklace, that special mushroom that crushed up in broth would break a child's fever, shells and stones, and once even a box of tiny metal balls for the tinkers, fetched all the way from the far tigers where men walked on their hands, if Clodio was to be believed.
"Well, that doesn't mean I brought anything this time," the old man said, spinning away from her. "At least nothing that's of interest to little girls."
"I'm not a little girl," she said, keenly aware of how her giggling made her sound like one. "I'm almost a woman grown and betrothed, and I want to see what you brought."
"What I've brought for sale, or what I've brought for you?"
"You always bring me a present."
"You are almost a woman grown and betrothed, you just said." too old to be chasing my hems for presents.
Clodio spun away from her, faster and faster, reaching out one long arm to keep her at bay,